This is Air Commander Starscream, and you are listening to Half Measures. Half Measures? Sounds like Megatron's battle strategy.
Kia ora, welcome into episode 212 of Half Measures. On the pod this week is someone who is another year older since we last heard from him. But the question is he any wiser? Is he any grumpier? Is he any better looking? It's Dan Whiting King. Kia ora, Dan.
Kia ora, Paul. I definitely feel older. I don't feel, you know, like when you're young, it's like, do you feel taller or do you feel, you know, I don't feel that. I just feel like I'm more fatigued than ever. It's
just more tired.
Yeah, just more tired. But it's, look, it's always a great time when it's your birthday. I've been very spoiled. I've had a good time. I've got a few movies to bring to the pod. So, yeah, another year older, not so much wiser. And as you say, definitely tired.
Well, congratulations on making it through another year, Dan. Birthdays these days, I don't tend to feel so celebratory about it. I just am like, oh, can we move on to the next thing? Because it's like you get to a certain age. But lovely that you had a good birthday. Exciting that you've got a few movies to bring to the pod. That sounds like you've been busy across your birthday. What else is going on?
Actually, there's no new car news. It's still, you know, much like the Willy Bin, just another unsolved crime out in society. Look, it's just the podcast. Look, I go to my day job, I go to bed, I wake up, go to my day job, and then one of those days right. I do the podcast, and that's my life. It's like I'm basically, when I retire, what am I going to do?
That's right. That's very relatable in the day job scheme of things. Actually, I would say in terms of my day job, I feel I want to share a certain amount of what a week I have had, Dan. As a colleague of mine often says, I'm not going to lie, after 18 years I've been working now for central government, the first 3 days of this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, were without question the most stressful I've ever had in 18 years. And if I'm looking a bit frazzled today, my manager said to me midweek, Paul, what's up with your hair? Like in the middle of this crisis, she was like, what's going on with the hair?
You didn't go in with no glasses again, did you? Like you had glasses on?
Oh, no. That's instant dismissal as far as I understand. But no, it's been long story short, there's been a restructure going on and it's been really awful. And I have to say, I feel very fortunate to have come out the other side of this with a role in this new structure, because a lot of my colleagues, many of whom I've worked closely with, have not. And it's been really hard to watch people you sit with and work with and just thinking about how they're feeling right now as we're having a bit of fun on this podcast really hits home. And, you know, we're recording a day later than usual, which I appreciate, Dan, but 632 jobs gone at my workplace, Dan.
It's grim times out there, isn't it? And it's not just your workplace. Like there's a lot of workplaces going through this. And I actually think this is one of the good things about the podcast. Like it actually kind of, you know, for that hour and a half that we kind of record each week, or 4 hours by the time we sort of like just generally natter before the podcast even starts, like I actually forget about everything else going on in the world largely. And so it's just kind of it's a moment of serenity.
It is. It's kind of a wee bit of therapy in that regard, just to sort of actually, like watching a movie, the idea is that you can just, you know, sort of just leave things behind just for a moment. But it's, do you know, it's been a hectic, what do we know, 144 days since our coalition government came into power. Not that I'm counting, of course, but yeah, we treat each day as a new challenge. And of course, we embrace it. Dan, let's not get me talking politics. Let's instead ask, what has the birthday boy been watching this week?
Well, Paul, because it was my birthday, I actually, myself and the wife actually took a couple of days off just to kind of, you know, not to be at the day job and just, you know, have some fun, catch up with some friends, go out for some nice meals. And we actually went to the movies, but not just one movie, Paul. We went to two movies. We went to So just to put this on your in sort of perspective. So this week I had Tuesday, Wednesday off, and on Monday night we were like, should we? Because there was two movies we wanted to see. We thought, you know, let's just start the birthday activities with a birthday Eve movie, and then let's also go to the movies on the birthday. So I'm coming in hot with two fresh movies for you. So the first one, this is the birthday Eve movie, is the 2024 movie Monkey Man. So this is a movie by Dev Patel. I'm quite a big Dev Patel fan. I feel like I've been kind of watching him ever since he was on that TV show Skins. And I just feel like he's been in so many great movies. This is his, I believe it's his directorial debut. And so let me sort of tell you about the sort of the premise of Monkey Man. Like I saw a trailer for it the last time I was at the movies, and it kind of just sparked enough interest that I was like, you know what? I'm interested. This is great. Not only sort of stars Dev Patel, also producer Jordan Peele, like quality. So basically it's about a young man who unleashes a campaign of vengeance against the corrupt leaders who murdered his mother and continue to systematically victimize the poor and powerless. This movie, Paul, is kind of a John Wick meets Kill Bill meets, I don't know, there's something else in there, meets Lion. Like it's kind of, so it's set in India. It's this kind of ultimately kind of like quite sort of like, you know, sad story of basically this, so Dev Patel and just sort of his life growing up poor, when he gets involved in like underground fighting, and he wears this like monkey mask, and like it's sort of just part of his character. And there's other people that dress up as like, you know, cobras or tigers or whatever it is, and it's sort of part of his sort of identity. And anyway, he's basically on this quest to track down the person who killed his mother, and he kind of like builds this elaborate plan to infiltrate the rich to kind of make it all happen. And it's, you know, unlike a movie like John Wick, which is just pure kind of like, let's have a lot of over the top, like extremely beautifully well choreographed fight scenes. This is actually kind of like quite a good story with quite a bit of heart, along with some pretty amazing, you know, well choreographed fight combat scenes. And Dev Patel, absolute. He's so awesome in this movie. And kind of the sad thing about it is, so we went to this movie, we were the only two people in the theatre. Like, and it was
brilliant.
And I don't know whether, like, it was a Monday night, like, keep that in mind. But it's, you know, and we were sort of in smaller town, regional New Zealand, so maybe that's sort of something to do with it. But it was so weird because we were sort of able to have a, like, you know, like, side chat about things going on in the movie. Like, we could actually check our phone to see what the time was without any concern in the world. Like, it was kind of great. But yeah, no, this movie, really enjoyed it. It's one I'd watch again. I'm glad I got to see it at the theater. I think it also had a bit of a different context as well, having I went to India probably about 6 or 7 years ago, and it kind of just brought back all the kind of like the memories of like how intense it is over there, and just how everyone's just trying to survive, and you know how, you know, the class system and sort of the structure of society over there. And I just think this for Dev Patel, sort of first time director, and even a young actor, he's just done so well. This was a great movie. I definitely recommend it when it comes out on streaming, or if you can get along to the theatre, such a good time.
Amazing. I was just about to say, because I've enjoyed him in so many things as well, and we've sort of reviewed a few of those things on the podcast, but I've always just simply thought of him as an actor, you know, like you say, with Lion and Slumdog and The Hotel and all the rest of it. But he's not only directed this as a first-time director, he's also written the screenplay as well. And I just watched the trailer as you were describing it, Dan, and you're right. It is really, really quite beautifully shot. That I can see that John Wick piece. I can definitely see that. And I'm guessing the lion piece is where the heart of the story is.
I think so. And the Kill Bill was kind of the almost like the revenge through when I think about the bride and Kill Bill and kind of the journey from kind of sort of like building yourself back up and sort of just having such like determination to get through. And it's all three of those things kind of coming together. And I think because it's set in India, it just has, you know, it's got sort of like the lore of a sort of a myth or a sort of like urban legend sort of behind it as well. And there's a lot more depth to it than I was kind of expecting. It's beautifully shot, great cast, great actors, all the guns for me.
All the guns. I love that. That's a great way to have your birthday eve. And of course, Sholto Copley, who I always enjoy, whether it's District 9 or even as Murdoch in the A-Team. He's just another great actor. So that's awesome.
I think too, just like they've kind of ended this movie in a way where it's either like kind of like the perfect ending, or it's, you know, where it's like kind of like this is a one and done, or it could even continue on if they wanted to. Like it's really set up for the possibility of a sequel. But I kind of hope they don't. Like, I think it should be sort of that sort of special one-off. My hope is that I think more people go and see it. Like, I hope my experience wasn't kind of an indicator of people's sort of interest in it, because I think there's a lot here that people will like. So, I think if this is sort of on your radar, I'd encourage you to check it out.
I'll tell you what is on my radar, Dan, and that is having the whole cinema to myself. What a great... I mean, obviously, you want people to be going to see the movie, but the idea of having the theatre to yourself and just... I mean, you could have been playing Animal Crossing on your phone and no one would have complained. Amazing.
Indeed. I kind of thought to myself, like, I wonder how much it costs to hire out a cinema. And then I was like, what a great, like, you know, like, birthday experience. But when it just kind of happens naturally, even better.
It's meant to be.
Better.
Meant to be.
So, yeah, Monkey Man. A lot of fun. All right, movie number two. So we're now on birthday day. So, you know, a few activities, family dinners, all that sort of thing. Before said family dinner, we were like, this was the core movie we were originally going to go and see. And this is the movie Civil War. So this is A24 movie. And again, so one I'd kind of seen the trailers for, and I know that it's kind of had a little bit of mixed reaction and mixed reviews, because this is basically about a modern day civil war within America. And I think from the trailer, and you wouldn't be wrong to think this, that you might think this is largely kind of about how the civil war goes down in America and kind of the two sides of the conflict and what happens. But what this movie is actually about is... It's a journey. I'll read out the synopsis and then I'll sort of break it down. But so it's a journey across a dystopian future America, following a team of military embedded journalists as they race against time to reach DC before rebel factions descend upon the White House. And so this movie doesn't really get too deep into who's right, who's wrong, what side it is. But you basically follow the, like, so there's kind of, well, there's a group of four of them, but our two prime sort of characters are Kirsten Dunst, who plays Lee, who's a real famous photographer, and then Wagner Moura, who plays Joel, who's a journalist, and then they're sort of followed by Kaylee Spaney, who's sort of a younger but kind of like budding photographer who really looks up to Kirsten Dunst's character. And kind of, so the whole world's kind of in turmoil, the civil war is kind of raging, it's about to come to an end, and we're basically following these journalists as they try to get their way across America navigating the civil war as press. And it's just kind of like, it's so interesting. And I think it's more interesting, I think, if you were maybe an American, you probably have quite different views about it and quite different sort of feelings. But
yeah,
interesting from a sort of like outsider looking in, and just And I can see why this film has got a little bit of hate, because it very much is about, you know, the importance of journalism, the importance of free press, the importance of being able to tell the story. But it also kind of just sort of like highlights the corruption of news and media and press all at the same time. And so kind of going into this movie, it was I was looking forward to it, but I didn't know quite what to expect. And then there was actually even a moment during the day where we almost kind of cancelled going to the movie, because we were doing some other stuff and we ran out of time. And then it all kind of worked out and we're like, oh, actually, we think we can make it work. And I'll tell you, Paul, it was an edge, like a movie where you're really sitting on the edge of the seat the whole time. The adrenaline is pumping. You're stressed out. Stressful things are happening. You don't know who's good or bad. You're constantly kind of nervous. It felt like at times it felt like The Last of Us. It felt like, you know, it's such a kind of a broken America. And, you know, I don't want to really give too many sort of spoilers away from the movie, but as they sort of like navigate different parts of America, you know, for example, like some people have been caught for like looting and there's like people running around with guns. You've got like the military, which, yeah, and you know, it's best described in the movie as like, you know, you think about kind of the near the end of World War II, heading into Berlin, where no one's like control's kind of been lost and it's kind of just full chaos, but it's all moving towards Berlin. This is kind of what this movie is, and it's like, because it's all heading towards Washington and there's just this race to get to the White House. It's just so, it's so powerful that, you know, they get to this other one town and this town's trying to act as normal, like shops are open, like there's people, like an old lady walking her dog, and but at the same time there's like snipers on the roof and you just don't know, like, you know, whether you can get like petrol, whether you can get food, whether there's going to be roadblocks, what side people are on. It's, I don't know, it's just, this was a melting pot of tension. I really, really, really enjoyed it. This is one of the greatest movies I've seen in a long time, and I can't wait to watch it again. Like, it feels like a movie that I think, now that I've kind of seen it, I kind of want to go, I want to see it again and just kind of go through it again, but kind of pay a bit more attention to the detail. It's got a fantastic cast. Kirsten Dunst, Wade Gamora, Nick Offerman, Kaylee Spani, Jefferson White from Yellowstone. It's so good. There's so many great actors and actresses in here. Top movie for me.
Jefferson White, friend of the pod, no less than. And President Ron Burgundy as well.
Not Ron Burgundy.
No, you know what I mean. Ron Swanson. President Ron Swanson.
Yeah, correct.
That's got to be worth seeing. This is definitely on my radar. This is one I've heard a lot about, and it's definitely on my radar. So that rewatch that you want, that's going to be on our card, and I look forward to reviewing it with you. I appreciate the detail, of course, being around the importance of journalism and the role that they play, and that being what it feels like, from what you've told me, the narrative of the movie. What always strikes me about this movie just simply is just the setting. So we talk about Handmaid's Tale. Handmaid's Tale has its own story with own characters and narratives, but what brings me into Handmaid's Tale is the circumstances in which these characters are playing out, the fact that it's got to the point of Gilead. So Civil War, for me, is just the fact that this polarized view that's occurring in politics and all the rest of it in America could lead to a situation like this. The fact that it could, you know, and they talk about it, you know, in not too far in the future, not doesn't look to be too far in the future. That's probably the morbid fascination for me, you know, the watching the train wreck type morbidity of that. Is that the right word? That's the bit that draws me in, is just the fact that, oh my goodness. Because if you Google, as I just did, Civil War without any context, obviously it brings you up pictures of the American Civil War, but there's a couple of pictures of Iron Man and Captain America, and there's a couple of pictures of this, but Civil War in the United States in the not too distant future is a terrifying thought.
And I think that this is kind of what's fascinating about it, because it does feel so real in the current climate. Like it, and I think to do this movie justice, you actually couldn't get into the actual detail of, you know, the, you know, they drop a few sort of like statements around why the Civil War had kind of got to this sort of state and kind of the feelings towards the president. But, you know, there's no way you could have done a movie like this justice by getting into the depth of the Civil War. That's probably a TV show, to be honest with you, because there's so much there. I think there's another actor who's not on sort of the main page of IMDb who is in this, which is Jesse Plemons, who we, you know, we most commonly know from Breaking Bad, which I didn't actually know is the husband of, I think I did know, but I kind of forgot it was Kirsten Dunst, his husband, which is, he plays
Fargo. It was Fargo, wasn't it? It was Fargo.
He plays an absolute psychopath of a soldier, and it kind of is both fitting and incredible. Kirsten Dunst, absolutely incredible. I feel like I haven't seen her for ages, and she just sort of carries with her this kind of like this weight of being a press or a war photographer, and she's been in many sort of different wars in her lifetime, and sort of always kind of like has these close moments with death and kind of surrounded by it. And I think the way they kind of just show what it's like to kind of capture that moment, particularly on film, is just amazing.
Wagner Moura is another one to watch. We recently saw him, of course, in Mr. and Mrs. Smith in a sort of more of a cameo role, but he forever, for me, will be Pablo Escobar from Narcos, one of the most extraordinary characterizations on screen I've ever seen. He's a terrific actor.
I think this is where I kind of got the Last of Us vibes, because he very much kind of looks like Pedro Pascal, and his name's Joel as well. And because it's like a dystopian America, all those components, like at any point you could have added in a walker or a zombie or whatever you or a runner, whatever you want to call them, and it all just would have made sense. So this is a must watch, and as soon as this comes out on streaming, definitely interested in a proper deep dive joint review.
Nice.
We talk about, you know, movies to own. Like, I actually feel like this is a movie I'd love to own. I just feel like it's controversial, it's fascinating. I know that there'll be a fair share of people out there that kind of hate this movie and hate this concept, but for me, I was fascinated by it.
Popularity number one right now, according to the IMDb ometer. So very, very topical. Oh, that's great that you've seen this, because it is on my radar, and it's good to hear a positive first review. Let's lock in the rewatch then.
Indeed. But apart from, it's a busy week this week, Paul, because we've got a couple of joint watches as well. But what have you got this week?
So I'm just bringing in one TV series this week, and that is season 2 of Trigger Point. So Trigger Point, drama series that follows a character called Lana Washington, played by Vicky McClure, as an experienced bomb disposable officer working for the Met Police in London. This second season is a bit of a different adventure for her. Another adventure for her on a mission to prevent a terrorist organization from gaining the upper hand in London. And, you know, as a Line of Duty fan, as a Jed Mercurio fan, and as a, you know, and with Vicky McClure attached to a British crime drama, it's always going to drag me in. And as I say, I did watch season 1 of this a couple of years ago, and so been looking forward to this coming up, and I have to say, it's a real step up from season 1. Season 1 was a good watch, but this is a lot more cohesive. It's a lot more tense. It's not afraid to take any risks. I'm just checking, Dan, before I go too far. This wasn't a joint watch for us, was it, season 1 of the show?
No, it wasn't. But it's funny you say that, because my mum has been like, every time I talk about things to watch, she's all over the show. She's like,
that's my generation, Dan.
Yeah, that's my. Maybe I should give her your number.
That would be easier. Then we can just decide what's on the watch list that way. It's just good value, you know, in terms of that British crime, London, and then the added threat of bombs, and it's, you know, very tense in that regard, and they don't hold back. It's a show this season, not so much the first season, but this season, it's not afraid to sort of take risks as well. So if you think about, we often talk about shows like Sopranos and Lost and The Walking Dead and other shows that play the whole no one is safe card, there's elements of that here as well. And that for me really adds to a show, because the minute you know whoever you're looking at on screen isn't safe, just because their name's in the main credits doesn't mean they're safe. That gets me glued. And so when you were describing Civil War, you know, edge of your seat, it's kind of not quite edge of your seat, but you're not looking away because you just don't trust that in the next, you know, that they're constantly defusing bombs and as many are going off as are not going off. You know, typically you always think, oh, they'll get there and they'll get the clock before it gets to 2 seconds. This is very much more, this is worst case scenario and the trauma of what happens after that. So very good show. And yeah, no wonder your mum's on about it.
What makes the sort of step up from season one to season two so good?
I think probably what I've just talked about a bit in terms of not everyone's safe, and so that makes you think, okay, this is for real. Like, you almost start thinking, is this the final season already? Like, they've already decided they're not doing anymore, so they're just getting rid of characters. Or is it actually just really good storytelling? I'm hoping it's the latter. But there's that. But then also, I just think the nature of this organization that they created and the motives behind it, it's always good, I think, if you can get empathy from the audience as to what the cause is of the organization, even if the answer is never violence and what the organization is choosing to do, obviously, is always wrong. But if you can see their side of things, that always gives a bit of an interesting dynamic and some really good casting on some of those baddies, if you like, as well. They were just some great, great performances across the board. Obviously, Vicky Mercure, you know, she's front and center here, you know, and unlike sort of like, you know, with Line of Duty, she's not really sort of sharing that lead. She is the right, that is great because you get a lot more exposure to her. The only thing that doesn't play it well, and my one criticism of this season, is that every time there's a bomb in London, that's it. Vicky McClure's going in. No, you stay there. I'm fine. I'm going. It's always, and it's like, it's a little bit much that it's always her. It's like, she's become the Batman of Gotham. She's become, you know, the bomb disposal for the whole of London. And it gets a little bit over the top at times. But beyond that, I think this is the most complete performance she gives in any show. I put it above her performance as Kate Fleming, which we all, you know, love in Line of Duty, but she's, there's a lot more stress situations. There's a lot more family dynamics going on. Really, it's really top quality British crime drama. And I've seen enough to call them out when they're not good. And this is when I'm calling out as good.
It's always intriguing too, when, like, why is there so many bombs? Like, you know, like, why? Like, is there so many bombs there actually are on any given day, we just don't hear about it? Or is there like a serial bomber? Like, what's happening?
That's right. Because, of course, when the bomb doesn't go off, chances are we're not hearing about it, right? And so that's quite scary. But, you know, another 6-episode, perfect length, no sort of filler. I thought it was good. You know, the twists, few red herrings along the way, which are good. The writing, as I said, we've got Jed McCurr as the executive producer, but Daniel Brierley does it pretty good for him, because he's not had too much stuff beyond this show. He's sort of really stood up. And a couple of familiar faces in the support cast as well. Probably Kerry Godleyman is the one I best know from Afterlife. She was very good in this too. But yeah, I really hope there's going to be more coming, because they've got a few things set up now that would be good to follow the character stories. But it's just a good amount of action. And just like we talk about with Bosch, it suddenly goes quiet and it's very methodical. And they go through the motions, and then all hell breaks loose and it's back on it again. So definite recommendation from me. And it's nice to have a second season that's stronger than the first, because quite often one is strong and then you get two not so good and then it drifts away.
I'll tell you the one thing that sort of has put me off watching this TV show, and I presume you watch this on TVNZ on demand, or
Yeah, TVNZ yeah, Plus. Yep.
Is it? I just don't want to watch it with the ads. Like I had enough trouble with The Walking Dead watching it with the ads. Like, and it's just, it's enough of a barrier to make. Like, because it's always too. Because I'm now so old, Paul, is like, I've moaned about this before, the volume change. Like, all of a sudden you're watching your TV show, then it's like the guy from Pack and Save screaming at you about like the latest prices of apples. Like, I'm just, I'm not interested.
And those apples are expensive as well. I don't need to hear how expensive they are. And that's the other thing. Not only is there more Abbotts now, because, you know, for anyone outside of New Zealand, our home sort of terrestrial TV is going through a bit of a struggle at the moment. And so they're trying to get the money in with more ads. So there's more frequent ads. Mm. But the worst thing for me, actually, Dan, and this is something Diana picked up on. She was like, God, they're really thrashing this ad, aren't they? And I was like, what do you mean? She goes, oh, every time there's an ad break, it's the same ad. I hadn't noticed because I just went straight on my phone, wasn't paying any attention. But they were playing the same ad for each ad break. So then, you know, when you watch an ad too many times and in too much succession, it's really frustrating. You're right. I try not to think about it, but it makes for a disappointing viewing experience. And we've said many times that if TVNZ were to offer their own subscription service where it's just ad free for a nominal fee, there's another income stream for them there. I think there's a few people out there who would consider paying it.
Mm. It's tough because I think every now and again, like, there is good stuff that's obviously on both the TVNZ on demand and the TV3, which I never know the proper names of, but it really is a barrier. And I just hate being like, don't advertise to me like just as random information. Like, at least give me like custom adverts tailored to my likes and interests, like the internet does, you know. So annoying.
That's right. The advert that I was getting thrashed at me the whole way was New Zealand Police, with the speeding advert with the guy that's the reason I pulled you over is because you were speeding, and you hear that like six times in a half hour show. It's too much. And also, whilst we're on the bandwagon of having a go at TVNZ, you can't download on TVNZ Plus as well. So, like, I travel to the city of Wellington several times a week, and it'd be nice to be able to download some shows, but I can't. And of course, I'm not going to use that much data on a train. So that means, again, they get less watches from me.
And saying that, even some of our Prime streaming services have terrible download services, but that's another complaint.
Correct, it is.
Well, anyway, I'm glad you enjoyed Trigger Point. I probably will get around to it. To be honest, if it appears on like a Netflix or a Prime Video or something, that's probably when I'm going to jump on. But yeah, I've heard good things. Everything you're saying makes sense. So I will, it is on my list for some point.
Very good, Dan. Shall we jump into the first of our Watches of the Week? And this one is an unscheduled one that we just decided last minute to do.
It is indeed. So the movie Argylle has recently dropped on Apple TV, or iTunes, as I like to say. And actually, for the longest time, it was like a, you know, you can rent this movie or whatever. And I was kind of interested in watching it. And I went into it the other day, and it was free for all to watch. And I was like, this is the time. I'm now interested. So Argylle, which is a 2024 movie, is about a reclusive author who writes espionage novels about a secret agent and a global spy syndicate. Realizes the plot of the new book she's writing starts to mirror real world events in real time. So this is a star-studded movie. We've got Henry Cavill, we've got Bryce Dallas Howard, we've got Bryan Cranston, Sam Rockwell, Daniel Singh, Dua Lipa, Richard E. Grant, like, it's John Cena. There's no shortage of big Hollywood names in this, and yet at the same time it very much feels like an Apple or iTunes movie. I've got a lot of thoughts on this one, Paul. What did you think?
I have a lot of thoughts on this as well, Dan. And the thing I'll call out straight away, just to go on the offensive right away, when you read out the cast, because you're right, huge cast there. I think it's a bit of a misleading poster and lead billing for Henry Cavill, because I feel like he was in this movie for like 15, 20 minutes with this haircut that looked like Jim Carrey from Me, Myself and Irene. And they're sort of like really going with that sort of idea and that image of him with Duo Lipa with the dancing scene. And it's like, these people are not in the movie much at all. This is a Bryce Dallas Howard movie, and she's good in it. Sam Rockwell is good in it. You know, Bryan Cranston, Samuel Jackson, blah, blah, blah. But this is not quite, you know, Henry Cavill plays Argyle. The movie is called Argyle. That's a little cheeky. I have a lot of thoughts on this, but we'll unpack them as we go. But my overall is, in terms of what it looked like and felt like, there was a lot of fun going on in this movie. Matthew Vaughn is a director that I really, really enjoy. He's a terrific director who's not a household name. But when you realize how many great movies he's done, you start to really sort of form a very positive opinion of him. You know, he's got the Kingsman movies, the X-Men, First Class, X-Men, Future Days, Layer Cake, I really, really love. Rocket Man, he's been involved in Kick-Ass. So there's heaps of things there. But I have to say, I don't quite know what Matthew Vaughn is doing here, because this movie, and I know I'm going to get one of those lines that you got recently, which is, look, Paul, this movie's just about having fun. But it was too heavy on the comedy for me, Dan. That's my big takeaway.
I think I'm just going to punch myself in the face for using the sporting analogy, but this is really a movie of two halves for me. Like, I kind of felt like the first half of the movie, I wasn't really into it, and I kind of felt, like you said, a little bit misled about who the cast was and what this was kind of about, and I kind of expected to be coming into more of a sort of a spy thriller, I guess, and I guess it was that, but it wasn't that, and I kind of felt like it didn't really sort of like tune up the volume until sort of halfway through. But for some reason, this movie reminds me of, and this is, if you haven't seen this movie yet and you still want to watch it, you might want to just sort of use the time codes, but it reminds me of The Long Kiss Goodnight, and it also reminds me of those movies like Romancing the Stone or Jewel of the Nile, where, do you remember the old school?
Michael Douglas, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, like it's kind of that type of movie, and I kind of liked it better when Bryce Dallas Howard kind of became the full kind of like spy agent herself. And I thought the twist to it was kind of quite fun. But I don't know whether I overly enjoyed kind of the journey that sort of got us from start to finish.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that wholeheartedly, because there was too many what's going on here moments and too many moments where it tried to be a serious movie. I thought the movie you were going to say, Dan, because there were bits of it that reminded me of Bullet Train, the movie we watched recently, but just not, I don't know. It's kind of, and I don't want to try and say that Matthew Vaughn has a type of movie, but it just, you know, when you sit down and you watch a Guy Ritchie movie, I kind of felt like, oh, this is what I'm going into. And of course we're talking movie and we're talking spoilers to a certain extent. The Kingsman links, you know, sort of thinking, oh yeah, he's the Kingsman, and those sort of quality, that sort of quality of movie. There were moments of that where I saw that in the directing, but the story side was where it was, for my money at least, let down a bit, which is interesting because Jason Fuchs, who wrote it, has done some amazing movies. He wrote the first Wonder Woman movie, which everyone, I think, universally really enjoyed. But it just didn't come together quite right for me. And in the end, I was kind of happy for it to finish. But I do have to say, Dan, I did enjoy the post-credit scene, or the mid-credit scene, I should say.
I think too, like, it's, before we jump into that scene, like there was kind of moments of like great cinematography and special effects, and then at the same time there was just as many moments of terrible CGI, and
like it kind the tiger.
Like the Walking Dead tiger. Let's get the Walking Dead team in. I think it kind of made sense, like, that it was terrible CGI when it was kind of like, this is a book that's kind of like, you know, kind of like someone's telling the story, and it's kind of either in someone's imagination, but it just kind of, it was a bit all over the place. And I think about the, sort of that big scene near the end of the movie, and they're kind of fighting in the sort of clouds of like pink and blue smoke. And it kind of, it was almost like someone's like, I've got a really awesome idea. This is going to look great. And it was kind of like, it was kind of cool, but you kind of couldn't see anything at the same time. And like, I don't know. It seemed like a bit of a missed opportunity. And at the end, like I sort of felt like that sort of mid-credit scene was a bit of a spoiler, oh, that's sort of a fun twist. But at the same time, I just felt like my kind of overall care factor was quite low.
Mm. The thing, because I enjoyed it, because I thought, oh, that's clever. But at the same time, I had this bittersweet taste in my mouth, which is a really arrogant thing to say, but it was kind of like, oh, no, don't lean into that universe. This isn't, that would be like at the end of a poor sci-fi movie, them having a cut scene at the end, which showed Han Solo walk in and be like, no, this is not part of the Star Wars universe. So that was the kind of thing. I kind of was like, well, that's kind of cool. It's clever what you've done, but also no, it's kind of like the first Suicide Squad movie sort of saying, no, don't try and link this into Dark Knight or anything like that. Please don't do that.
Well, so the reference that we're making here is it links into the Kingsman universe, and like from a, you know, the concept of Argyle, like, yep, that does kind of link into the Kingsman universe, but I kind of feel like those movies have maybe kind of overstayed their welcome a little bit as well. Like, I enjoyed the first Kingsman movie. There's been moments in the other movies which have been like kind of good, but most times, a bit like Argyle, they're a little bit too long. They're a little bit too, I don't know, just don't quite work for me. But look, you know, I got my dues last week when I was like, I'm just not having fun in these movies, like with Roadhouse. So maybe you're right. Like, maybe I'm not coming into this movie with the right attitude either.
Well, that's my attitude coming in. The one thing, well, there's several things I enjoy, but like you said, I think Bryce Dallas Howard, haven't seen as much of her, you know, thinking about other than the Jurassic Park movies, haven't seen too much of it. I'd say it's one of the better performances on screen. Like, I really enjoyed her in Terminator Salvation and a few other movies. This is one of the better performances for me. I really enjoy her behind the camera. You know, we've seen her directing Book of Boba Fett and Mandalorian. So that was good. The support cast, I'm calling them support cast, even if they are in lead roles, were fun. Bryan Cranston was fun. Samuel Jackson was fun. Sam Rockwell was, well cast in his role there. But I'm not going to be recommending this. And I've already had one person ask me about this because I told them, and they were like, is that the movie about a cat? And I'm like, well, it's not really about a cat, but when I look at the poster, I can understand why they might think that. I've not been recommending it, Dan. I've been coming in, if I had to be honest, I've been coming in 1.5 guns. I don't know about you.
Mm-hmm. I think it's about the same. And look, you can have all the ingredients to make a cake, Paul, but you can't always make the cake, if you know what I mean. So,
correct.
You know, it's got, like, you know, you can have a great director, you can have a kind of interesting story, you can have a great cast, but all of those things don't necessarily equal a great outcome. Look, I think I only really give it a slight pass because I watched it on streaming. If I had paid, you know, hard-earned dollars for it, I would have had probably even more kind of allergic reaction to it.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. Fun on streaming, family fun, just fun, but nothing serious.
Yeah. I think I'd rather have more like James Bond, to be honest, like rather correct. Than the sort of like slapstick.
That's like, what I was expecting. I was kind of, because Henry Cavill as well, I don't know why stupidly I was thinking like, oh, Man from U.N.C.L.E., Matthew Vaughn with the layer cake type of, like what he did with Daniel Craig, thinking, oh, maybe it's a bit of that, but I couldn't have been further, but I just feel somewhat typically bloke-ish saying those things, and that, It was billed as a comedy, and so you get what you pay for.
I actually do think it is a great movie poster for all it's worth, like just with the cat and the Argyle print. So, look, that's probably a bit of a miss from us. Paul, shall we jump into our actual watch of the week?
Indeed. So this week's Advertise Watch of the Week is the third season, the most recent season of The Morning Show. And we advertised that some weeks ago, and you can follow what we're going to be watching if you want to watch along by clicking on the link in the show notes and joining our Discord community, where we always have at least the latest three things we're watching so you can catch up. Season three of The Morning Show. So we sort of watched this out of kilter, didn't we? I think you started off and then I was like, oh, I'm going to jump in on this. And then we eventually watched season two together. What about season three, Dan?
Yeah, I think I overall enjoyed season three. I think one was really good. Two kind of like wasn't quite as the same standard as one. Three, I think, sort of made a bit of a comeback back into the morning show that I enjoy. Though I do feel like the morning show keeps getting further and further away from the actual name of the show, The Morning Show. I think the absolute star of the show for me is definitely not Jennifer Aniston or Reese Witherspoon. It's Billy Crudup as Corey Ellison. He's my absolute favourite character. I just love everything about him. I love that he's just trying to hold this damn network together, Paul, and everyone's trying to bring him down, and he's the only one that can see the future of it. And I feel like in this third season, it was almost trying to play like a at the kids' table of Succession, where like they were like, we've got to you know, have the shareholder meeting, we've got to get the everyone on board, who can outplay who. But it was it. Like, having seen Succession and being such big fans of it, it's hard. Like, it's such almost like the kindergarten version of Succession that you just don't take it as seriously when the way it kind of plays out.
I listened to a number of podcasts, Dan, brief aside, and on a couple of them, when one of the co-hosts says something, the other co-host says, have you been reading my notes? Because they have like a shared notes document. Now, of course, this is Half Measures and we don't share our notes. But I do, on this occasion, ironically, have three bullet points. And my three bullet points say one was great, two was okay, three is a step up. The second bullet point says Billy Crudup is the standout. And then the third bullet point says Succession. And that's to trigger me to talk about how elements of this from a business, money, sale, greed, double crossing reminded me of Succession. Not in a copying way, but just, you know, stories about making business takeovers actually an exciting thing to watch on TV. That's the sort of thing there. But, you know, we've talked about Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon being great. And in the, you know, in the previous seasons, that we talked about them having sort of some of their performances being peak performance standard performances. Season three is, as you say, is the Corey Ellison show. Billy Crudup is just an absolute standout for me. And this guy is firmly on my radar because other than Alien Covenant and that sort of brief show up in Mission Impossible 3, I don't really have too much of him, but I just love him in this real, I'm cool, I'm chill. Oh no, actually I'm an anxiety ridden issues with my mum guy. He's just, and always with a smile on his face, even in the most ridiculous of situations, he's superb.
Oh yeah, I think he's always got the best one-liners on that show, and I love that just no one, like everyone's trying to bring him down, but he just maintains like kind of like this upbeat positivity that you can't beat. I think now this might cop some flack, and I'm saying this against the characters, not the actresses, but I think Alex Levy, played by Jennifer Aniston, and Bradley Jackson, played by Reese Witherspoon, are two of the biggest a-holes on, you know, this whole show. And particularly Alex Levy, I kind of feel like deserves everything that happens to her. Like, she's so, like, they're so self-centered, and they're so kind of, they cause just as much destruction as the news they try to report on. And then every now and again, they bring this arrogance to journalism that they're kind of above everything else. And this is where, like, kind of interesting going into that Civil War movie is that, like, you know, that's sort of speaking to the importance of kind of journalism. But then, like, there's this side of the journalism, which kind of feels so insincere, so manufactured, and so, I don't know, this is, I struggle to enjoy those characters, and I want to enjoy them, but even the way Alex Levy, when she fired Chip as her assistant, like as her producer, sorry, it was like I think there's some great guest actors in this season, like really great having John Hamm in there is kind of like an Elon Musk type character, and just kind of playing kind of big media but other big things going on, the cover-ups. It's interesting how they kind of like loop back on the Bradley Jackson story and kind of almost giving her comeuppance. I think overall, I know that they're going to do another season of this show, but it equally could have kind of ended there, because it's all just kind of like, I don't know how many, like, surely there's not too many seasons left of this show. Like, they've kind of played it out from different angles. And it's, I'm glad to be through the COVID side of things, put it that way.
Oh, 100%. And just a quick mention of John Hamm, you're right, he's like the guest of the season, if you like, and it was great having him come in, kind of once again playing the bad guy, like he did recently in Fargo, but nowhere near as bad as that bad guy, but just a very rich Elon Musk type bad guy with a bit of arrogance coming with him. The thing the morning show does well across all three seasons, regardless of how successful each season's been, is how it incorporates those real life issues. So, you know, we had what happened with Steve Carell's character in season one, and the parallels to real life there, the COVID-19 pandemic of season two, and then of course the Capitol riots, and you know, the all of these things made for compelling viewing. I think you're right though, it's a really good observation. It is moving further and further away from the actual morning show. It's now about the network and the evening show and the competing. And you're right about Jennifer Aniston's character, Alex Levy, just becoming dislikable. Great performances, but dislikable characters. But Reese Witherspoon's character, Bradley Jackson, that is a real shame. That is a real, that's showing the downfall of someone who was principled, had real, I'm going in to get the real story. I will not be, and just slowly but surely chipped away at. And it's really sad. And so I would hope the fourth season that there would be some sort of redemption to bring us back to the more season one characters that we had, or if we are going to bring this show to a close, that we have something really, really controversial.
It's funny you say that though, because I think, you know, if they do anything to kind of redeem Bradley Jackson, it kind of just shows that like money and power actually just redeems you for no matter what kind of crimes you've committed.
There's no winning, is there? It's kind of, but Anakin came back and we forgave him, and he did a lot of bad things while he wore that dark suit.
It's actually funny, I was thinking about that the other day, because even like at, you know, Disneyland, there's like, you know, Anakin walking around these days, and it's like, you know, he's a bad guy, but
do you know what this guy did? Let me tell you.
Not yet though, not yet in the timeline. I actually think with like, so overall though, like I enjoyed season three, I had a really good time, and I think it's actually almost the secondary characters. Like I really love Greta Lee as Stella Black. I love Karen Pittman as Mia Jordan.
Take the haircut of Stella's haircut.
Yeah, definitely. I even love the Steve Carell sort of side story. I love the Chip Black story. As I say, you know, we both like love Corey Ellison. There's a lot of interesting characters here, and these moments of kind of like fascination, I think, with, you know, like Alex and Bradley. But I almost feel like they're less critical to my viewing experience. And whenever they're on screen, obviously they're powerhouses and obviously they're great actresses, but I don't even know if they're critical to the morning show story for me anymore. Like it's almost you could bring in fresh blood, like give me the DeJuan Terry and who's he often alongside Gianna Gavanka, bring in new hosts, like give me those new stories, because it's almost like this, because, and this is the thing with Alex Levy's character of Jennifer Aniston, like just like, you know, you are not currently facing any sort of like criminal sort of court proceedings, but like you are just so complicit in so many of these activities, you might as well be. And it's, I don't know, just the sense of, I don't know, entitlement is just, it's so mind-blowing.
It is. It's an interesting observation because characters like Yanko, he had a pretty good story narrative going on through that second season after what happened in the first, and he just seemed to disappear into the background. But at the same time as disappearing into the background, his character became one of the front presenters. He was actually on the couch, and yet his story, so we got more eyes on him but with less quality of story, and that was disappointing. But the other character I thought was good was Nicole Beharie's character, Christina Hunter. I thought she was very enjoyable throughout as well. I thought she was very powerful. But I really enjoyed this, and I think it's because season two was so. I thought season one was superb. I thought season two was okay, but this just brought it back. I felt like the drama was there, and the whole takeover, who was behind, you know, who was actually, you know, because we saw this threat of Fred, the horrible Fred from season one, who we thought would never return, was seemingly behind everything, and that was quite daunting. And so I enjoyed the tension of that.
I definitely want, this better not be the end of the Corey Ellison arc. Like, if he's, like, I don't want him to be done. And my other prediction for season four is I can imagine, like, a Chip Black, like, you know how he had that big rant on air and he's like, I'll pay the FCC fine for swearing on television. I could imagine, like, a Chip Black, like, news segment or something, you know, where they'll go and do, like, hot takes with him, or where they put it on streaming or whatever they do. Like, you could see him kind of coming back in some type of, like, special reporter news desk type role, because I imagine there's probably, like, a lot of great press about the way he was, like, raw and honest with the community.
That was funny because he swore the first time and he said, oh, look, I'm really sorry, I apologise, I will pay the fee for, you know, there's obviously, like, a 10,000. And then he's like, do you know what, I'm not sorry. And then he just was really enjoying swearing, was just, like, tossing up in his head how much money that would cost him for each swear word. It was well done. The other person to make note of, I just remembered, was Tig Notaro, who was John Hamm's sort of, like, kind of like bodyguard, but also intelligence advisor. She's quite fun as a character. She's good in Star Trek Discovery, which is one of the few things I would say about that show that works well. And I enjoyed her double-crossing character in that too.
Mm. Yeah, so look, I feel like even though we've kind of given it a little bit of a hard time, I think exactly what you said. Season one, good. Season two was just okay. Season three, getting more back to the greatness. I think, yeah, I would imagine it's maybe got one more season in it at a pinch. I'm surprised, to be honest, you know, even just keeping Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, there'd be no sort of small cost to keep those two on board. So maybe one more season. But, yeah, overall, I'd probably give this 2.5, 3 guns at a pinch, maybe 2.5.
Yeah, I'd go 2.5 as well. And that's... That's with season one for me probably being the three, and then dropping down to sort of maybe 1.5 for season two. So yeah, 2.5 feels about right for me as well. That's available to watch on, as Dan says, Apple TV Plus. And next week, our watch of the week, we'll be watching Rebel Moon Part 2, Tarkin's Revenge, and that's available to watch on Netflix. It's not called Tarkin's Revenge. I was just trying to look at the name. It was it Pat the Scar Giver. Part two, the Scar Giver.
I probably should watch the first one again, but I'm not going to. But I better watch a YouTube recap just to remind myself what happened in the first Rebel Moon.
That's the way to do it. Always the recap, Dan. Always the recap. So with all your birthday watches and all the joint watches, what's come out on top for you as pick of the week?
Civil War, closely followed by Monkey Man, but just for all the reasons I've already discussed, it was such a intense, different, highly enjoyable, can't wait to watch it again, thought-provoking movie, easily the book of the week. How about you?
Yeah, so for me, I'm going with the second season of Trigger Point, just a really high action, high drama, high stress And those are the things I want when I'm watching someone defusing bombs in central London. So, yeah.
Very good. You have it at work, so you might as well have it on the silver screen as well.
Correct.
All right. Shall I take us over to the news desk?
Yeah.
All right. So O.J. Simpson has passed away at the age of 76 after a battle with cancer, which I know is a very controversial death. You know, I've seen a lot of people online have been like, you know, particularly celebrities, been like, good rhythms, like it's, you know, I don't know too much about the O.J. case, so I'm not going to comment on it. My biggest O.J. Simpson connection is watching Naked Gun, so that's kind of where most of my memories come from. Anyway, segueing over, there's a new Naked Gun movie in the works, and Pamela Anderson will be joining Liam Neeson in the Naked Gun remake. So apparently it's set to hit theatres on 18th of July, so not too far away. I'm nervous. I'm really nervous.
That's dangerous. I have not heard about this, and I'm in my mind, Liam Neeson is now, it's very confusing as well with the L and the N. Liam Neeson is assuming the Leslie Nielsen type character. Now, I know he does comedy well. We've seen it in Life's Too Short with the Ricky Gervais comedy. Mm. We've seen it in a few things, so I know he'd be able to handle the comedy side of things, but I don't know. Sorry.
I don't know either.
Really devalues this for me. I'm sorry.
I think this is going to have to come straight to streaming. I just don't know. You know, that type of humor, I just don't know if it's going to work. But we'll see. We'll see. What else have we got here? So Steve Buscemi is apparently joining Wednesday Season 2 as the new principal of Nevermore's Academy. So I think he'll be a great addition to that cast. We also have some pretty widely shared news across the internet that Keanu Reeves will voice Shadow in Sonic the Hedgehog 3, which has been met with much love by both Sonic and Keanu fans, so we'll probably hear more about that soon. We also have news that's kind of fresh out today that Quentin Tarantino has scrapping the Movie Critic, which would have been his last movie. So he is not going to progress with that one. Obviously, it's not working out. He's gone back to the drawing board. So, yeah, I thought that was a bit further along in development than maybe it was. And a final bit of news for me is it looks like there is going to be Frank Sinatra biopic, which seems to be all the rage these days in Hollywood, and that is going to be directed by Martin Scorsese, starring, as you would have guessed, Leonardo DiCaprio. So I'm sure that will be interesting and impressive. That is me, Paul.
Very good. Tell you what's impressive, Martin Scorsese just continues to deliver massive movies now into his 80s and still doing that. That is quite impressive. A couple of things from me, Dan, as a fan of Star Trek Lower Decks, the creator of that show is now doing a animated series based on the old Sega video game Golden Axe, which goes back some time, and I remember coming home from school and playing that on my Atari ST. So that's interesting. How it runs, who knows, but an interesting idea, which has got my attention. Also got my attention, Dan, the best TV show that I've watched over the course of 5 years, if I had to summarize that as a five-year view, would be For All Mankind. It was my number one for my top tens for the first three seasons. Season four was, you know, a bit lukewarm, but season five has been renewed. Can't wait for that. But even more excitingly, a spin-off series is in the works for All Mankind as well. So very excited for that because, yeah, that's a franchise which, as I say, if I had to say about the last 5 years, that would be the show I would point to if I could only choose one. And then the final thing, Frank Todaro, who is the voice of Starscream in Transformers and who very kindly voices our introduction audio for our podcast, for those of you who've listened in and have always wondered who's that dude, that is Frank Todaro, the voice of Starscream in Transformers, he had an incredible opportunity to get involved with the planned celebrations for the 40th anniversary of Transformers. And he gets to voice Starscream in a read of the original Transformers alongside some of the original cast, including Peter Cullen, Optimus Prime, and Frank Welker as Megatron and Soundwave. If you're in the US, head along to Transformers40thCinemaEvent.com to get a look at that, and also tickets. So what an incredible opportunity. Could you imagine sitting opposite the table with the Optimus and the Megatron and just playing the, because unfortunately the actor who plays Starscream from the 80s has passed, and so Frank's been asked to step in as the new Starscream. Could you imagine that opportunity to sit in the same table as those people?
Amazing. I wonder if Frank could organise a collective Transformers intro for the podcast. That'd be awesome.
Then, if that was to occur, if Peter Cullen as Optimus Prime was to, I can't even finish the sentence, that would be me done for good. On that note, I'll take us across quickly to our mailbag. I will start off with Jane from Wellington, who enjoyed our review of Napoleon, but also said, Paul, just checking if you've ever heard of Oliver Cromwell. And that was it. To which I replied, no, I haven't. And so I quickly Googled. And so this was in the review when we were talking about the French anti-royalists and the royalists. And we were talking about, you know, the change in history with the French royal family being overthrown. And I said something, I don't know, like, oh, imagine if someone tried to do that in England with the royal family or whatever. I said, well, enter Jane, the historian, who said Oliver Cromwell. He helped the parliamentarian forces defeat King Charles I, which resulted in the monarch being tried and beheaded. And so Cromwell went on to become Lord Protector. He's the only commoner in British history to rule Britain by becoming the head of state. And then the thing for me was kind of like, what if that happened? How did the royals ever get back in? And so I did a little bit of reading, and there was a political crisis after Cromwell died and in 1658. So this is a long time ago. And the restoration of the monarchy occurred 2 years later, and Charles II came back to rule. And fast forward to today, and we now have Charles III. But I think the problem here, Jane, is that I haven't seen this in a movie or on telly. So how on earth can I ever have known this? Because clearly books are not something I do. And it's a shame that The Crown on Netflix didn't go back a few centuries earlier, so I might have known about this already. But thank you, Jane, for writing in about that one.
You're probably away there at school as well, so you might have missed the history lesson.
Always wagging. That's me. Dan, one for you. We had an anonymous write in regarding WrestleMania, confirming that it is indeed now split over two nights, as you predicted it might well be, so they can accommodate both the Raw and the SmackDown brands. And I think there was more comments around this over in our Discord as well this week, I noted, Dan.
Well, I noticed the chairman of the podcast, Paddy, sort of commented that he's been to a WrestleMania in real life, and that he was saying the energy definitely starts getting a bit flat near the end. As you could imagine, like you can only maintain so much pure energy for so many hours. So,
correct.
That's awesome. I feel like Paddy's, he's done it all. He's watched everything. He's been everywhere. No wonder he's the chairman.
Correct. And there'll be more on the chairman in just a few minutes, in fact. The last week's peak performance was, of course, Bill Murray, but I just wanted to backfill, if I may, a couple of peak performances that came in late. And we always say if they come in late, they still count. Well, Michael from North Carolina went through our posts and was like, oh yeah, I forgot to do these. So very, very quickly, let's go back as far as Eddie Murphy, Golden Child, 48 Hours, Trading Places, Simon Pegg, Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, Spaced, another shout out for Spaced, and Michael J. Fox, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Family Ties, Back to the Future, Jeff Bridges, Jagged Edge, The Fisher King, Big Lebowski, George Clooney from Dusk Till Dawn, Up in the Air. in classic Michael fashion, he has neglected to give us a peak performance for this week's peak performance, which was Bill Murray. So that's just great, because that's how it works sometimes. But thank you for going back through some of those recent ones, Michael. Bill Murray, Bruce went with Space Jam. Unforgettable moment when he showed up in that movie. Ian, he had the honourable mention for Life Aquatic and peak performance, Groundhog Day. Colin went with Lost in Translation and a shout out for the 2022 Groundhog Day Jeep commercial. I YouTubed this earlier because I was like, what is this? And it's actually really good. It's like the same sets. Bill Murray's back in the Groundhog Day universe. It even has some of the original cast members from Groundhog Day with Bill Murray, and he's driving around in a Jeep. It's really well done. So great shout out there. Thank you, Colin. Samara, honorable mention, Ghostbusters, peak performance, also Groundhog Day. And Paddy gave us his 3-2-1 of Stripes, Ghostbusters, and Groundhog Day. And as you mentioned, Dan, as chairman, he invoked his privileges as chairperson to have honorable cameo mention of Space Jam as well, which I will allow, but I will need some help, if you saw my facial expression before, Dan, of remembering what's the movie Stripes?
It's a bit of an oldie as well. I can't remember. I can picture the cover of it with obviously Stripes. It's Bill Murray in the military. I think from memory, it's been a very long time since I've seen it. I can kind of picture his face and wearing a like one of those American Army helmets, but I can't tell you much more about it. It's been way too long.
Very good, Dan. Peak performance time.
It is peak performance time. So much like our watch of the week, Paul and I take turns choosing different actors, actresses, producers, directors, you name it, and we choose what we think is their peak performance. Paul, this week we are looking at Stellan Skarsgård.
Indeed. So great pick, Dan, because when I look back through, I'd seen a lot more of his stuff than I had actually realised I'd seen. Honourable mention for me, this was, I think, in our first year of podcasting, our first top 10 we had of the year for 2019. My number one show of the year was Chernobyl, which was an incredible miniseries. And Stellan plays Boris in this, who's the deputy chairman of Council of Ministers. Absolutely breathtaking performance from him. A really emotional, highly charged series around obviously the real life disaster of Chernobyl, but he just was so strong in this. He was one of the leads alongside Jared Harris and Paul Ritter, but for me, he's actually the one I remember. Probably him and Emily Watson, if I'm fair, but yeah, Stellan Skarsgård in this was absolutely sensational. My peak performance, and I honestly don't believe this is recency, I just thoroughly enjoyed him as Luthen in Andor. I just found his double-crossing, trying to play both sides, but ultimately for good. And I really hope there's ways for us to have more story about Luthen in future Andor, regardless of what's happening in the series at this point. I really enjoyed him. I thought, again, when I think back to Andor, I think obviously as Cassian, I think about Smeagol, and I think about Luthen, Stellan Skarsgård. Really, really strong performances. And I had a couple of others that could have been in this, but that's how much I enjoyed him in Andor. What about you, Dan?
Yeah, some good shouts. And I think you're right, like been in far more movies and TV shows than... Of course, it was almost a hard pick, but I went for honourable mention, similar to your peak performance. I went with Andor for all the same reason. I thought just I enjoyed sort of the spy nature that Stellan brought to the role of Luthen Rael. So easy honourable mention. But for my peak performance, I'm actually going to go with Dune 1 and 2, or Dune 1 and 2, depending on how you want to say it. And this is where... he plays Baron Harkonnen, and so this is sort of the villain of the Dune universe. And I think it's just such a Like, it's a villain that doesn't necessarily get a lot of screen time, but it's enough to have. He's the key villain of both movies, and just the presence, the effects, the way that he kind of delivers his character. Like, I feel like he's really one of those actors that's always probably kind of looked a little bit older than he really is, and he's just getting he's just getting better and better. And I feel like he's kind of hit like his Hollywood stride over the last few years, in terms of, not in terms of his craft, but just in terms of becoming such a known name. And in fact, the whole Skarsgård family is incredible. But yeah, so for me, Andor, and we'll narrow it down to Dune Part Two.
Really great shout on the makeup as well in Dune. I mean, the look of his character is amazing. He always looks good in makeup, and not to try and get a sneaky mention of something else in there, but when you think about his character in Pirates of the Caribbean as well, the makeup, stellar in makeup, is great. But also, to your point about him getting better with age, couldn't you just imagine him as a Bond villain? Wouldn't he just, as he gets that little bit older, just be absolutely brilliant as a Bond villain? He'd be with that voice as well.
Perfect. So yeah, those are some great movies in there. I'm hoping that I'm gonna sneak a little bonus one in here now. Hopefully someone writes in, someone like the chairman, I imagine, with something like The Hunt for Red October. Surely there's a little
nod in there. It was so hard to go past those movies.
Indeed. Anyway, Paul, I guess that brings us to the end of another episode of the Half Measures Podcast.
Does indeed. Thank you as always for listening in. If you've spotted anything that historically is inaccurate, please do show us the right ways and tell us where to find the information in books or the internet. Thank you.
Also, a very special shout out to our Patreon producers, Samara Wanenking, Dinah Kanawa, Trisha Brady, Tony Baby Horsefall, and Michael Chalmers. If you too would like to become a Patreon producer of the show, then you can find those details in the show notes below. But until next week, everyone. Adios.